And from black, white, and other to check all boxes that apply, how the American government tracks race has changed. Add that to the cultural debates, and you've got a constant reevaluation of identity. Joining us to continue the conversation, we've got Relina Joseph, adjunct assistant professor in the Department of American Ethnic Studies and Women's Studies at the University of Washington, and Jongmiwa Bullock, the president of the Association of Multi-Ethnic Americans. She's also a PhD candidate in American Studies and Ethnicity at the University of Southern California. Hi, guys.
Hi. Thanks for having us.
So, Jongmiwa, let me start with you. You heard Lisa Funderburk talk about this moment in history. Your organization is very much one where tell me if you disagree, it couldn't have existed half a century ago. It is something where identity has changed, our concepts of identity have changed. Do you think that the election of President Obama, the fact that you've got folks like Tiger Woods, means that we're in a better place racially with identity, or is it still difficult to try to discuss these intersections of personal identity?
Those are all great questions. I actually want to answer the first part of your question first, which was about could an organization like AMIA, which is one of the oldest leading umbrella associations for multiracial families, individuals, and organizations, actually today marks the 20th anniversary of AMIA's founding. But one thing that I want to mention is that actually in 1892, there was actually a group called the Manasseh or the Manasseh Society that started in Wisconsin and Chicago, actually, which was an elite group of multiracial people that lasted for 40 years. If you notice on the 1890 census to the 1930 census, there actually was a strong, you'll see a shift in the census where black was differentiated from differentiated with mixed race sort of groupings. So you'll notice that there is a change. So I wanted to add that into the discussion. And that kind of gets to this question here is, now that we have President-elect Obama, you know, has a discussion changed? I do think that there was a missed opportunity during the elections to talk about, you know, multiracial identity in a different way than we have before. And by that, I mean that, he was from the media's perspective, you know, he had been cloaked as a single race category, the first black president. But I think there was a missed opportunity while he was talking about his mixed race identity, but in a kind of, a colorblind sort of way. But I would say that there are what I call in my research the politics of being multiracial that are still at play. One thing that the previous guest was saying is that, we're talking about black and white, but we do understand that people who are biracial or multiracial, a person like myself, I'm black and Asian. Now, what does it mean when white is not part of my binary? And how do I engage in that discussion? There are many people listening who might call themselves, you know, like Tiger Woods, Kablan Asian, or people who are Mexican and black. I mean, what does it mean to be two so-called minority populations that engage in this discussion where white is not part of the binary? And I think that should be brought into the conversation as well, because AMIA, we represent all these diversities. And I think that was what I meant by a missed opportunity, but it doesn't mean that we can't engage in this conversation from here forward.
Relina, do you think that there was a deliberate attempt to avoid this conversation? Because there have been so many conversations going on about race, and it's not as if the senator didn't deal with it at all. I also actually, let me go to a clip and have you respond to it. There was a moment in his first press conference as president-elect where he answered a question about the kind of dog the Obamas might adopt for their daughters.
There are a number of breeds that are hypoallergenic. On the other hand, our preference would be to get a shelter dog, but obviously a lot of shelter dogs are mutts like me.
So, Relina, first of all, what did you think of his comment? And secondly, did people avoid the topic of biracial identity on purpose?
Well, on a personal level, I just kind of smiled when I heard that comment. It was actually a little bit of a relief for me to hear Obama speak in a lighthearted way, on the one hand, because we don't see that side of him too often. And also for us to have this little peek into his own racialization. I think that, as Jemmy was alluding to, that many of us can read multiracial politics into the way in which he racializes himself. So, for example, we all know that he talks about his mother from Kansas and his father from Kenya, and so, and then leaves it as that. He doesn't make an I am statement. But this kind of racialization by parental proxy lets so many different constituencies then read themselves into him. And I think is part of the formula that made him such a viable candidate.
Jing Miwa, you mentioned that there are a lot of people who are also, say, two identities of color in their family. And tell us about your impressions of how things have panned out on this whole idea of how you change racial classifications in the census. You mentioned something from a long time ago, and racial classifications have changed, but there was this significant change for the last decennial census that really changed from a, you know, kind of a pick one to a, you know, pick all that apply. What kind of ramifications have we seen since then of that change?
Mm-hmm. Well, there was a lot of mobilization in the 80s, and actually the people who preceded me, the late Ramona Douglas, the former president of AMIA as well. And what was happening is that there was a whole discussion happening all over the country that, you know, actually there are families that want to mark all that apply for their children. Because what does that mean? Although race is a social construction, right, that's why we see it changing on the census. At the same time, it becomes real on the ground level for people, right, how you identify. And so we noticed that there were many things happening. We thought if we helped to move and mobilize people to change that and to mark all that applied, first of all, we would engage in a discussion about race that hadn't happened. Second of all, we could actually speak to parents out there that are still, you know, having to deal with their own cultural competency when it comes to racially identifying their children, which has a profound effect. I think Relina probably could speak to this as well, that in the academy, it seems that a lot of times multiracial children, by the time they get to college, it's the first time they've actually feel like they can talk about their multiracial identity in a kind of more engaging and sophisticated way that sometimes, unfortunately, isn't happening in the household. And we thought that change in the census would initiate that. And it really has, but I think there's so much more work to do.
Well, Relina, what about downsides? Some people look at the approach that the census took and say, well, it actually is something that could undermine efforts at affirmative action. What right. do you think, Relina? I see Jung Miwa shaking her head, but I'll come back to you. But what do you think?
Well, that was the big debate, right, in the lead up to the 2000 census, was that all different types of ethnic advocacy groups, the NAACP, La Raza, a number of other groups, were really opposed to the development of this check all category because there was this fear that this multiracial group would actually usurp the resources. And I think that the interesting thing is that that did not happen because although on the census one is allowed to check all, the way that those numbers are tabulated is in all different types of ways. And so there are ways to figure out how many people are multiracial African American and still be able to maintain the integrity of African American numbers. I think that at the same time, I'm cautious of the exalting of a multiracial identity above all others, as opposed to having a type of fluid identity that Lisa Funderburg spoke about. So, for example, to be black and to be mixed race, or to be black and to have a mother from Kansas and a father from Kenya, because that doesn't necessarily mean that you're claiming a mixed race identity. So that's my one hesitation about, mm-hmm. I think, some of the directions that the multiracial movement has gone, is to really kind of uphold a multiracial identity above all others and to the exclusion of the type of multiplicity that's so important when we have communities that are still struggling.
Okay. I have to jump in because we're just about out of time. Jung Miwa, what should we look for ahead, either in terms of legal issues or cultural issues?
Okay. Actually, to say this really quick, and this might go back to the mutt comment, I would say that if President-elect Obama is listening, I would say that in terms of the mutt comment, it was wonderful. I think that you made a public announcement and, you know, kind of a, I guess, covert way of talking about it. But at the same time, I will say that you have a challenge here in the country, that mutt is a derogatory term, and there are people who are looking up to you. And we would hope that we can engage in that discussion and be able to talk about it in a more sophisticated way from this point forward.
All right. Well, it looks like we're going to have a lot to talk about. Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
We were speaking with Jungmiwa Bullock, president of the Association of Multi-Ethnic Americans. She joined us here at NPR West. And Relina Joseph, adjunct assistant professor in the Department of American Ethnic Studies and Women's Studies at the University of Washington from KUOW in Seattle. That is our show for today. Thanks for sharing your time with us. You can visit us online at nprnewsandnotes.org. And News and Notes was created by NPR News and the African American Public Radio Consortium.